Chapter 10 Buddy Love. The Transformative Power of Love or Friendship. Warning: This chapter contains spoilers for the following books. Because of Winn-Dixie by Kate D. Comello. Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. It Had to Be You by Susan Elizabeth Phillips. Me Before You by Jojo Moyes. Twilight by Stephanie Meyer. The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks. Everything, Everything by Nicola Yoon. Nothing is more primal than a love story. Don't believe me? Just take a look at the $1 billion in revenue that romance novels bring in every year. They currently make up over 33% of the U.S. book market. Why? Because nothing hits home more than our human desire for companionship. But love stories don't always deal with romance. Yes, most romance novels do fit into this category, but our genre dubbed buddy love goes beyond just romantic love, and in fact umbrellas every kind of love, from romance to friendship to even the love of a pet. This genre is defined by its key characteristic: stories in which our hero is changed by someone else. It's true, all stories are about transformation, or should be. The plot is set into motion by a key moment or event, the catalyst, that will eventually lead to the hero's ultimate change. But in buddy love novels, the plot that will bring about this change is usually set into motion by a being rather than an event. That's why in the majority of buddy love stories, the catalyst is the meeting of that very special buddy. This being, whether it be a love interest, a new friend, a pet, or even an inanimate object, comes into the hero's life and forever alters it. Life doesn't start seriously changing for feisty Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice until she meets the proud and disagreeable Mr. Darcy. Likewise, the world of Opal Bellony doesn't get turned upside down until she meets the scruffy mutt, Winn-Dixie, in Because of Winn-Dixie. And the lives of both Phoebe Somerville and Coach Calbo are turned upside down when Phoebe inherits the Chicago Stars NFL football team in It Had to Be You by Susan Elizabeth Phillips. Regardless of who the buddies are, the dynamics of the story are the same. Buddy love novels are about completion. One person being made whole by another. Or at the very least, one person, or dog, who is the catalyst for bringing about a certain change that the hero desperately needs. In Because of Winn-Dixie, 11-year-old motherless Opal is struggling with loneliness in her new town. She wants friends. Enter Winn-Dixie. The dog not only becomes her first friend, but also ends up leading Opal to meet a whole cast of interesting characters who eventually become her friends too. And in the end, Winn-Dixie also brings about the ultimate change that Opal needs in her life, to finally connect with her father and realize that he is enough for her. In Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth needs to learn how to get over her prejudices of others. Who better to eventually teach her to do that than the pompous Mr. Darcy, who turns out to be nothing like how she originally judged him to be? Kissing scenes or no, these are essentially the same stories. Both Elizabeth and Opal are made better because of another. And even in the cases of stories where the buddies don't end up together, like Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell, or The Fault in Our Stars by John Green, the buddies of these stories still help change each other for the better. Now, don't be fooled by the words love story. Just because your novel includes a love story doesn't automatically kick it into the buddy love camp. The question of whether your novel is truly a buddy love depends highly on how you define your A story and your B story. Remember, the A story is the primary storyline, what's happening on the exterior, what the hook of the novel is, what's driving the action of the plot forward. Whereas the B story is often the side story, a character or characters who in some way represents your hero's spiritual or internal journey. In buddy love novels, the A story is the love story. It's the whole hook. We pick up It Had to Be You because we want to read how tender-hearted Phoebe Somerville, who is absolutely clueless about football, clashes with the macho, hardened coach of the Chicago Stars. That's the promise of the premise. Phoebe's relationship with the players and the team managers, and her learning curve as the owner of a pro football team, those are the side plot. It's the B story that helps progress her arc. Similarly, we pick up Me Before You by Jojo Moyes because the epic tale of ordinary Louisa Clark falling in love with extraordinary quadriplegic Will Traynor, A story, touches our hearts. And even though, yes, Louisa's relationship with Will does eventually push Louisa to learn the theme of living well, the way that all A stories push your hero toward change, that theme is represented by Louisa's tense relationship with Will's seemingly cold mother, Camilla Traynor, B story, who despite her wealth, has been stalled in her own life as well. On the other hand, in novels of the non-buddy love variety, the love story or friendship story is usually found in the B story. It's usually not the main focus of the plot. But the ultimate test of whether your story is a buddy love is in the catalyst beat. Is it the mere existence of another that sends your hero down the path to change? If the answer is yes, then you probably have a buddy love on your hands. And if you do, then make sure you study the three elements of all great buddy love stories. 1, an incomplete hero. 2, a counterpart. And 3, a complication. First off, let's take a look at the incomplete hero. Whose story is this really? Even though buddy love stories are innately about two people, there's usually one half of the pair who will require the most work in order to get their life back on track. This is the person or being who has the biggest transformative arc ahead of them, who needs to change and does change the most. When studying buddy love novels, a hint is to look at who is narrating the story. If it's a first-person account, like in Me Before You, narrated by Louisa Clark, or a close third-person account, meaning we see the perspective of only one character, like in The Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight by Jennifer E. Smith, narrated by Haley Sullivan, then chances are that's the primary hero the author has chosen, because that's whose head the author wants you to get inside. Same goes for when you're writing your own novel. Who you pick as your narrator or narrators says a lot about whose story this really is. Take a look at young adult bestsellers like The Fault in Our Stars and Twilight. The female characters in these novels, Hazel Grace and Bella, are the heroes of the stories. The books are told through their points of view, while their love interests, Augustus and Edward, are the agents of change. Sure, Augustus and Edward have small arcs of their own, but it's nothing compared to the drastic way in which Hazel and Bella both change. After all, Augustus dies at the All Is Lost, leaving Hazel to finish her arc alone. And Edward has had several lifetimes as a vampire to do most of his changing. This particular novel is about Bella. There are exceptions, however, where both buddies are equally changed by each other, and therefore we end up with two heroes. These are called two-handers. In these situations, the author usually gives us two perspectives to match, like in It Had to Be You, which features third-person narration from both Phoebe and Coach Calebo, or in Eleanor and Park, another popular young adult novel. Rainbow Rowell chose to tell this tale of unlikely love from both Eleanor's and Park's points of view, which means she had to give them both equally compelling transformations. They even both got title credit. Regardless of how many narrators or heroes you have, in all of these examples, our incomplete hero or heroes is in desperate need of some change in their life. And that change is going to come from our second buddy love element, the counterpart. This is the one person or being in the world who will eventually make our hero's life complete, or who will bring about the change our hero is so desperately needing. Often the counterpart or buddy is a little quirky, a little unique. There has to be something about this exciting new person that's going to shake things up for our hero, which means they can't be dull or ordinary. They have to be worth an entire catalyst. The introduction of this other has got to rip our hero right out of their stasis equals death slump and into the second act. Think about Augustus Waters, who shakes things up for Hazel Grace in The Fault in Our Stars with his witty dialogue and quirky views on life. Without him, Hazel would have never known love. She would have just continued to go on in her depressed state, essentially waiting to die. Or think about the dog, Winn-Dixie, in Because of Winn-Dixie. This isn't a normal dog. Kate DiCamillo made sure of that. This dog has spunk, character. He smiles at people. And without him, who knows if Opal and her preacher father would have ever found what they both needed in each other. And finally, the third ingredient in every great buddy love story is a complication. This is what keeps the two buddies apart, at least for now. The complication might involve another person, creating a love triangle, sometimes called a three-hander. The complication might be physical or emotional, like Will's condition in Me Before You. Or the complication could be a misunderstanding or a clash of character, which can often lead to the two buddies hating each other at the beginning, like in Pride and Prejudice or It Had to Be You. Other complication options include clashing personal or ethical viewpoints, an epic historical event, or even the general disapproval of society, like the star-crossed lovers of The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks. Or the complication could be that your counterpart isn't even human, like in Twilight. Nothing complicates a good romance, like finding out your one true love might kill you and drink your blood. Regardless of what complication you choose to throw at your buddies, the element is crucial because it provides the primary conflict of the story. Without it, really, what's keeping the lovers from running off into the sunset together on page 10? That would be a pretty short novel. Something must be keeping your lovers or buddies apart. Otherwise, there'd be no story. The conflict in a buddy love story is what will make or break your novel. If you don't have enough of it, your reader will give up because the story is too easy, and the love or friendship won't feel earned. The longer you can keep your lovers apart, the more gaps you can wedge between them, the better the story, and the more engaged the reader. Even if your buddies get together early in the story, there has to be something precarious about their relationship. Why aren't they living happily ever after yet? The complication serves as a tiny bomb between the two counterparts, just waiting to go off and fling them apart. Ironically, though, often the complication is also keeping the two buddies together. Hazel Grace and Augustus Waters in The Fault in Our Stars are bonded because they've both been through one of the worst things a person can go through, cancer. But that's also the thing that causes Hazel Grace to keep her distance at first. In The Notebook, Allie and Noah are kept apart by the prejudices of society and her family. And yet, that's the very thing that makes them fight to stay together. In Me Before You, Will's condition is the very reason Louisa met him in the first place. She was hired as his caretaker. Yet it's also creating the main source of conflict between them, both physically and emotionally, right until the very end. That complication can be a tricky thing. It can pull buddies together and drive them apart. And often the complication leads to an all-is-lost beat in which the two lovers or friends actually do break up, separate, or have some kind of huge fight. Since the all is lost is defined as the lowest point of the story, this separation beat is often found in buddy love novels, because what's lower than losing the one you've grown to love? Buddies need this beat so that they can realize what they truly have and figure out how to fix their flaws. That is, learn the theme, in order to save the relationship or themselves. In the end, almost all buddy love stories contain a similar message. My life changed for having known another. That's the hook of these stories. And that's how love stories, romantic or not, teach us about life. Funny how we keep turning to the same lesson over and over again. I guess it must ring true. To recap, if you're thinking of writing a buddy love novel, make sure your story includes these three essential ingredients. An incomplete hero who is missing something physical, ethical, or spiritual. They need another to be whole. A counterpart who makes that completion come about or has qualities the hero needs. A complication, be it a misunderstanding, personal or ethical viewpoint, physical or emotional challenge, epic historical event, the prudish disapproval of society, or another. This is the primary source of conflict in the novel, working to keep the buddies apart, but also to pull them together. Popular buddy love novels through time include Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, Anna Karenina, Tolstoy, Safe Harbor by Danielle Steele, The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks. For a complete list, please refer to the bonus PDF that came with this audiobook. Here is the beat sheet for Everything, Everything by Nicola Yoon. Save the Cat genre, buddy love. Book genre, young adult romance. Total pages, 306. Delacorte hardcover, 2015. Author Nicola Yoon burst onto the young adult novel scene in 2015 with her stunning and beautiful debut, Everything, Everything, about a girl with bubble boy disease who has been confined to her house for most of her life. But when a boy moves in next door, it changes everything for both of them. The novel, which interweaves traditional narrative with graphics, charts, illustrations, emails, instant messages, and other creative devices, debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and was also adapted for film in 2017, starring Amanda Stenberg and Nick Robinson. 1. Opening image, pages 1 to 2. Our hero, Madeline, Maddie, introduces us to her all-white room with white shelves and glistening white bookshelves. Her books come from outside, decontaminated and vacuum-sealed in plastic wrap. Page 1. What is the reason for all of this? We will soon see. But for now, all Madeline tells us is that she has read a lot of books. 2. Setup, pages 3 through 20. By page 3, we learn about Madeline's condition. She's essentially allergic to the world. She has severe combined immunodeficiency, SCID. She can't go outside, ever. Her Act One world is literally her house and nothing else. No wonder she reads so much. The only people Madeline ever sees are her mother, who's a doctor, and her nurse Carla, who tends to her during the day while her mom is at work. In the setup, we're further introduced to Maddie and her unique world. Maddie is highly creative, but also very bored and lonely, things that need fixing. Her biggest want is to see the outside world. Really, there's only one thing to wish for, a magical cure that will allow me to run free outside like a wild animal. Page 11. But because of her condition, she probably never will. She spends her days attending school online, reading and writing, and posting spoiler reviews of books. She spends her nights with her mom watching movies or playing board games. Basically, her life is predictable. So what better buddy to disrupt her world and send her life spinning in a new direction than someone who is completely unpredictable? 3. Catalyst, pages 20 through 21. A moving van pulls into the driveway of the house next door. From her bedroom window, Maddie watches a teenage boy dressed in all black, a counterpart to her all-white world, jump out of the truck. From the very moment she first sees Ollie, he is in motion, constantly moving, jumping, and running wild through life. He is the polar opposite of Maddie, someone who is literally stuck in one place. But as is the case with all buddy love stories, he is exactly what she needs. Someone who can pull her out of her lonely, predictable existence and teach her how to really live. When their eyes meet through the window, nothing will ever be the same again for either of them. 4. Debate, pages 22 through 41. Who is this boy, and what, if anything, will become of this? That is the debate question. And Maddie spends the next 20 pages obsessively spying on Ollie through her bedroom window, trying to answer that question. Fascinated with him, Maddie makes logs of his family's comings and goings, marking Ollie's schedule as unpredictable, an opposing reference to her predictability, which was directly noted earlier on page 13. In her spying, Maddie discovers that Ollie is into parkour, another direct opposition to her lifestyle. She also notices that Ollie's dad is a very angry person who is often abusive to Ollie, his mother, and his sister. When Ollie and his sister come to the door with a bundt cake that their mother baked, Maddie's mother has to try to politely decline it. She can't bring anything in from the outside that might contaminate the house and make Maddie sick. The mystery of her mother's refusal intrigues Ollie, inspiring him to make contact with Maddie through their facing bedroom windows. Unable to speak to one another, Ollie constructs hilarious tableaus in his window that make Maddie laugh. The debate comes to an end when Ollie writes his email address on the window. Maddie doesn't hesitate. 5. Break into 2, page 42. Maddie emails Ollie. Their relationship officially begins. 6. Theme stated and B story, page 68. Maddie's nurse, Carla, states the theme when she tells Maddie, "Everything is a risk. Not doing anything is a risk. It's up to you," page 68. Maddie is extremely risk-averse at the start of this novel, as well she should be in her condition. But if she wants to really live, not just stay alive, she'll have to find the courage to take risks that she's never taken before, including risking her own life. "There's more to life than living" is essentially the lesson Maddie will learn by the end of the novel. Carla, who states the theme, is also the B-story character. Even though meeting Ollie is what pushes Maddie outside of her comfort zone, it's Carla who helps her every step of the way. 7. Fun and Games, pages 42 to 130. The Act 2 world is Maddie's life with Ollie in it. It's night and day different from her world without him. A fun and witty email exchange begins, which quickly morphs into an instant message conversation. In this upward path, fun and games, Maddie and Ollie slowly get to know each other, talking about small stuff to start with, favorite books, movies, and food. But soon as they begin to trust each other, they move to more serious topics, Maddie's disease and Ollie's abusive father. Maddie is consistently able to make Ollie smile, even during his darker moments, which proves that he's just as in need of her as she is of him. After Carla reveals that she knows about Maddie's conversations with Ollie, Maddie asks Carla if they can meet in person, promising to keep it a secret from her mother, who would never approve. Carla, of course, says no, it's way too dangerous, but then changes her mind, embodying the theme in her belief that some things are worth the risk. Ollie is decontaminated in the house's airlock system, and the two meet in the sunroom, where they are ordered not to ever touch. During their first meeting, it becomes obvious that Maddie and Ollie are falling hard for each other. But the bouncing ball narrative brings Maddie back down to earth as she realizes how dangerous this relationship is, not only to her health, but also to her heart. For the first time in a long time, I want more than I can have. Page 80. Maddie is worried about the wanting and the desire. Knowing that she can never really have Ollie makes her immediately back off from the relationship. But it's Carla, the B-story character, who convinces her not to break things off with Ollie, once again bringing up the theme. Do you really want to lose the only friend you've ever had over a little bit of heartache? Page 86. Maddie quickly realizes Carla is right, and she takes another risk to see Ollie again, vowing to just be friends. But the more she sees him, the more convinced Maddie becomes that she will fall in love with Ollie. It's inevitable. Ollie and Maddie continue to open up to each other. Maddie tells Ollie how her father and brother died. They were hit by a trucker who had fallen asleep at the wheel, shortly before Maddie was diagnosed with SCID. Meanwhile, her mother is getting suspicious of her changed behavior. Maddie is more tired than usual and skipping their normal nightly activities in order to IM with Ollie. Maddie feels guilty for lying to her mother, but she still continues to take bigger and bigger risks. In one of their secret meetings, Ollie and Maddie touch for the first time, which immediately leads to a conversation about kissing. Maddie starts obsessing about the idea of kissing Ollie. Could she really do it? The idea of her first kiss is exhilarating. 8. Midpoint, pages 130 to 138. Ollie and Maddie kiss for the first time in an epic false victory midpoint. And just like that, everything changes, Maddie notes on page 130. But the stakes are raised a few pages later when Ollie gets into a huge fight with his dad on the sidewalk outside. When Ollie's dad punches Ollie in the stomach, Maddie doesn't think. She just reacts. She runs out the front door of her house to get to Ollie, her mother screaming at her to stop. This is a definite shift from wants to needs as Maddie takes the biggest risk she's ever taken, going outside, risking her life for him. After it's over, her mother realizes that Ollie is not a stranger to Maddie. They know each other. Maddie lies and tells her that she and Ollie are just online friends. 9. Bad guys close in, pages 139 to 235. The downward path starts instantly when Maddie's mom finds the rubber band Ollie wears around his wrist inside the house. She knows that the two have met in person. She immediately revokes Maddie's internet privileges and fires Carla, replacing her with a horribly strict tyrant of a nurse named Janet. Maddie can no longer talk to Ollie, and she slips into despair. Summer ends, Ollie goes back to school, and the two see each other less and less. Then Ollie comes home from school one day with a girl, and even though Maddie soon learns that it's just his lab partner, she quickly realizes that she'll never be able to compete with any other girl. It doesn't matter if she's pretty or not. It matters that she feels the sun on her skin. She breathes unfiltered air. It matters that she lives in the same world that Ollie does, and I don't. I never will. Page 157. After Maddie witnesses another fight between Ollie and his father, she makes a decision. She books 2 tickets to Hawaii for her and Ollie and sneaks out of the house, leaving her mother a goodbye letter that says, "Because of you, I've survived this long and gotten a chance to know my small part of the world. But it's not enough." Page 168. Maddie has tasted a piece of happiness with Ollie and now she can't go back. She can't be happy again without him. It's like I can't look at the world in the old way again. Page 168. Maddie is able to convince Ollie to go with her by lying about having obtained some experimental pills to keep her from getting sick. The two jet off to Hawaii for 2 days of bliss. Maddie sees and swims in the ocean for the first time, and the two dine on delicious food and spend a romantic night together. And throughout everything, Maddie gets closer and closer to learning the theme. On page 208, she notes, "I'm being reassured with every breath that I'm more than just alive. I'm living." 10. All is lost, pages 234 to 237. But it all comes crashing to a halt when Maddie falls very sick and collapses in the hotel room. Then, in a whiff of death, Maddie's heart stops. 11. Dark Night of the Soul, pages 238 to 270. And starts again. Maddie's mom arrives in Hawaii, discharges her from the hospital, and brings her home. Her bedroom has been turned into a hospital room, and Maddie's despair is deeper than ever as she realizes she will be trapped in her house forever. How can I live the rest of my life in this bubble now that I know all that I'm missing? Page 242. Over IM, Maddie breaks up with Ollie and rejects the theme when she says, "I've learned my lesson. Love can kill you, and I'd rather be alive than out there living." Page 247. And in a very apropos Dark Night of the Soul moment, Maddie even draws a map of despair, complete with mountains of misery, a desert of sorrow, and an ocean of regret. Page 249. She stops responding to Ollie's emails, and eventually his emails stop coming. In an attempt to cheer her up, Maddie's mom hires Carla back. Maddie and her mom slowly fall back into their old routine. Maddie even starts posting her spoiler reviews again, returned the familiar. Ollie, his mother, and his sister finally leave his father and hastily move out of the house while he's at work. As Ollie looks up at Maddie's window, in a mirror to the catalyst, their eyes meet for seemingly the last time. Maddie finally reads Ollie's emails and learns that Ollie was able to convince his mother to leave his father only after he told his mother of Maddie's bravery in Hawaii. If nothing else, her risk-taking inspired someone else. Then Maddie's world shatters when she receives an email from the doctor who treated her in Hawaii, saying that she got Maddie's blood test back and doesn't believe that Maddie has SCID or has ever had SCID. Dark night epiphany. Her mom denies this, claiming that the doctor simply doesn't understand this rare and complicated disease. But Maddie is not 100% convinced, especially after Carla tells her, "Sometimes I think maybe your mama's not quite right. Maybe she never recovered from what happened to your papa and brother." Page 270. 12. Break into 3, page 270. Maddie takes the biggest risk of all when she vows to find out the truth about herself. She asks Carla, B story, for help, and Carla orders a blood test. 13. Finale, pages 271 to 305. Point 1. Gathering the team. As Maddie waits for the blood test results, she decides to look through her mother's files. She finds records of almost everything except the official SCID diagnosis. Where is the proof of the life I have lived? Page 273. It seems there isn't any. Point 2. Executing the plan. She confronts her mother, who swears she has the diagnosis somewhere. But as she searches hopelessly for it, Maddie realizes that Carla is right. Her mother is not right in the head. And that's when I know for sure. I am not sick, and I never have been. Point 3. High Tower Surprise. Maddie quickly discovers that her mother never did recover from the death of her father and brother. And when Maddie got sick as a baby, shortly after the car accident, her mother convinced herself Maddie had SCID. It was a way to literally protect her from the world by hiding her away from it. Maddie's entire life was a lie. Page 279. Maddie gets the official word from her new doctor. She does not have SCID. But after living inside for her entire life, she has a very vulnerable immune system and has to take things slow. Her relationship with her mother is forever altered, and she's not sure she can ever forgive her for what she did, despite B-story Carla's suggestion that she should. Point 4. Dig deep down. Maddie eventually buys a ticket to New York City to find Ollie. As she flies to New York, Maddie digs deep down and proves that she has finally learned the theme when she observes on page 300. Anything can happen at any time. Safety is not everything. there's more to life than being alive. And again, on page 302, when she writes a spoiler review for The Little Prince that reads, "Love is worth everything. Everything." Also, in her decision to seek out Ollie, she starts to understand and forgive her mother. Love makes people crazy. Loss of love makes people crazy. Page 300. Point 5. Executing the new plan. Maddie texts Ollie and tells him to go to a used bookstore in New York City, where there's a gift waiting for him. She hides in the stacks and watches him arrive. When he shows up, she notes that he's not wearing all black anymore, a nod to how much she has changed him as well. 14. Final image, page 306. A literal final image as we turn to the last page to find a visual representation, one of Maddie's drawings, of the gift Maddie left for Ollie, a copy of The Little Prince. Inside, she has written, "Reward, if found, me." They have re-found each other. Why is this a buddy love? Everything Everything contains all three elements of a successful buddy love story. An incomplete hero. Maddie is bored, lonely, and unable to safely leave her house. Despite the fact that she makes the most of her existence, she is still clearly lacking something. A counterpart. From the moment he's described, Ollie is Maddie's natural counterpart, a yang to her yin, a free spirit to her captive one. A complication. Maddie's rare illness is the complication that is keeping them apart. It is the primary source of conflict between them throughout the novel. If you'd like to read an abbreviated version of this beat sheet, check out the Cat's Eye View for Everything Everything, which can be found in the bonus PDF.